You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the wall, and I'd like to get the information, asking for love, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hi, everybody. You are listening to hour number two, and this is indeed the Common Sense Show. I'm your host, Dave Hodges, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And I don't know if you caught the events with Evergreen State College telling all white professors they had to leave campus for a white free day, and they were protesting white supremacy, white privilege. Pretty bad. This one professor wouldn't leave. Well, the people at Evergreen State College, let me say this to you students. You're going to need our next sponsor, BeCandid.com. There's a lot of reasons why people can't speak out. They're close to retirement. Their boss will fire them. They're an avowed Democrat. They love Hillary. They think she's wonderful. And people have to kind of bide their time, but they have a burning desire to get out there and share. Well, BeCandid.com, and if you sign up for the Common Sense Show under BeCandid.com, you can express yourself to your heart's delight, and no one will know who you are. We don't take your information, that's for sure. You know, we're not Google. We're not going to sell it. We don't even get it. So come on there, register, and you people at Evergreen State College, you come on here and really tell what you think. But I got bad news for you people at Evergreen State College. Ain't no employer worth a damn who's ever going to hire any of you punks. Anyway, that's BeCandid.com. Take advantage of it. Secrecy, why you need to have it. By the way, there was a time in my life when I needed to. I've lost employment over this, so let's hope it doesn't continue. Also, I want to talk about my friend Bob Griswold, who we're trying to work out another date for him to come on because things are beginning to happen. And when things are happening, I always like to get him on as a barometer to tell us what we should be doing. And he's at readymaderesources.com. Do you need communication? Do you need water? Do you need anything? Basically, Bob is the best I know for communication, but his water filtration system is second to none. His night vision is second to none. Go to readymaderesources.com. You'll see the phone number displayed prominently there, and Bob always hangs around after the show because he gets a fair amount of people to call him, and he'll be there to answer your calls, and he'll give you free advice. He'll walk you through a lot of things. Again, that's readymaderesources.com for all your prepping needs. That was a good hour by Joe, and Joe, thanks so much for joining us here. And Joe and Doug bring so much to our show. And so matter of fact, and by the way, they mentioned tomorrow at 7 p.m. on Monday, they're doing a replay on Memorial Day, and that replay is from Thursday night's show, and they're going to hit child sex trafficking really hard and a whole lot of other issues. You know, I'm certainly going to record it. I'm not going to be home. I'm going to be at a neighbor's house at a party, but I'm certainly going to record it, and I'm going to certainly listen to it down the road, and I encourage all of you to do too, right here on Global Star Radio Network, 7 p.m. Eastern. Well, our next guest is no stranger to our longtime listeners. It's Gary Haven. And Gary was a producer of the movie Amerageddon, which, you know, we advertised for a lot here on the show. We advertised for it on our website. And basically, it was the story of a UN takeover of the country, or an attempted UN takeover. And boy, I tell you, folks, we're not out of the woods as far as that theme goes either. And it was a movie that made a lot of average Americans ask a lot of questions. Terrific movie. Gary's also possibly, and I'll put in quotes there, possibly in line to become the next ambassador to Haiti. We'll have to ask him about that. And he's come on tonight to talk to us about what he calls the biggest untold story. And this is how he characterized it before coming on. I'd like a little mystery, and I think we're going to get our appetite wet here. Gary, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dave. It's always glad to be with you, and I'm talking to you from beautiful Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I'm racing hotter balloons. So, awesome. Having a great time doing something I love and getting to spend time with you. So what a great day.
It really is. I've been to that event in the past. About 20 years ago with my good late friend Bill Pollack, who used to work with the CIA, and Annie was my news director, was his late wife. But Annie wasn't with him then, but I went out there and shared some time with him, and hot air balloon stuff. I mean, it's an incredible sight. You look over that whole valley running up Interstate 25 next to the Sandia Mountains, and you see nothing but hot air balloons. It's really quite a sight to behold, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Now, the big one is in October. This was a small event. It's a really competitive one. So not too many of us out there today, but it's still just spectacular. You know, it's the most photographed event in the world, and for good reason. So anyway, I'm having a great time and glad to talk with you. Let's kind of jump right in it. The lead-in was the kind of the greatest story never told last week. You know, your audience in particular is aware of Wag the Dog, and that was the movie about Clinton when he bombed Serbia on the same day that the Monica Lewinsky story broke. In other words, he used war to cover the news cycle to try to avoid being revealed as the, you know, the unkind person towards women that he was. And last week we had a very similar situation, and no one really talked about this in those terms. You know, no one in the mainstream media covered the Seth Rich story. They were too busy covering this Russian nonsense. And a lot of the Russian nonsense, the collusion, was actually explained away with the Seth Rich story. You know, they came out last week and found that Seth Rich had been the one that leaked the DNC emails to WikiLeaks. And what happened was that meant that DNC had means, motive, and opportunity to assassinate this 27-year-old young man, who, by the way, was angry because he had witnessed the DNC cheating to get Hillary elected over Bernie Sanders. He was a Bernie Sanders fan. And so he tried to get the evidence out, and he winds up dead. Two bullet wounds in the back. They called it robbery when he still had his watch, his cell phone, his gold necklace around his neck. And we now know that the Washington, D.C. Police Department was told to stand down. And it's been about 8 months, and we've really learned nothing of this thing. But this Wag the Dog, the mainstream media came out with both barrels blasting on this Russian nonsense and Trump collusion to provide cover for the real story. And the real story is that the most logical explanation for Seth Rich's death is the DNC assassinated him to provide cover for what they've done. So this was huge. And I you know, your listeners are pretty smart people, and I imagine a lot of them drew the same conclusion. My son had to point it out to me, my son Jason, that, hey, this looks like occupying news space so that they wouldn't have to tell the Seth Rich story.
I would agree it's a distraction. I think there's no question about it. But something else has come to light, and I'm going to just throw a couple embers on the fire here, and it may not fit with what you know. But, you know, you had Dacey, Amy Dacey, who was connected to Seth Rich, immediate supervisor, would have had access to everything he knew and did and so forth electronically. And then, of course, there's Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And all three of them exited the DNC at about the same time. And now in Debbie Wasserman Schultz's district, a federal prosecutor who was looking into DNC voter fraud, which, of course, would have brought him across Seth Rich's material, he was found with his head bashed in on the beach two nights ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you know about that?
Yeah. And, of course, Wasserman Schultz being fired, you know, a while back. And of course, you've got the Pakistani computer security people who have stolen the congressional. It's, you know, Dave, it's so have to say even Ray Charles could see this. The blatant corruption, particularly of the Democratic Party, and of course those that are behind the scenes in power, it's amazing how obvious it is, and of course the mainstream media doesn't cover it, which is even more amazing. They're so obvious now to be completely corrupt in promoting propaganda rather than being the watchdogs of democracy.
They're complicit, but I covered this, I don't know, 9-10 months ago. The Washington Post took $600 million from the CIA, so how could you believe anything they would say?
Yeah. Yeah, as if that isn't evidence that they're bought and paid for. It's really amazing. You know, your job's really gotten easier lately. It's just being handed to you. People now who are not willing to look at this are having to literally refuse to look at the evidence because it's so plain.
I used to have to go hunting for stories, Gary. I'd go hunting and look at a couple of things and kind of which was more important. Now it's kind of like I have to do a top 10 and set priorities. Because I do, about 5 podcasts a day because it's quick and dirty and I get things out faster and I can write a full-length article. And then I have a full-length article every day. So I'm really limited to about 6 items that I can cover. And I have to tell you, on most news days, there's 15 to 20 things that need attention. I can't get to them all.
Yeah. You know what? I want to point out a couple of things on the Seth Rich case that people are not talking about. You know, the family has come out in the last week or two, and they're saying, don't make this a conspirational story. And so they've gone after Sean Hannity. It looks like he may be fired next week because he was pursuing the truth on the Seth Rich story and where it's going to lead ultimately, which is the DNC. But the attack on everybody to keep this quiet, and there's some evidence that have come, we can't prove just yet, but we know that he was alive when he was taken to the hospital. And the emergency physician, allegedly, was kind of relieved of duty, and he mysteriously died a couple hours after being at the hospital when his vitals were apparently fine. And so that's suspicious, and we obviously know that it wasn't a robbery because he still had his stuff. But the family is being represented by a DNC propaganda specialist. He's a guy named Bauman who comes in when the DNC has issues and provides, he's kind of the cleaner. And so now the family wants us to not talk about it because it's dishonoring them, but they hire the DNC cleaner to come in and propagandize this thing to protect them. And by the way, who's paying them? Because they said they had no money. So, as an American, I feel bad for the family, but this isn't just about the family. And the family, when they hired the DNC guy to represent them instead of another publicist that maybe was neutral, okay, they contributed to the need to pursue the truth, regardless of how they're feeling. I mean, they're the ones who put somebody in place that would lie, cheat, and steal to avoid the truth because they work for the DNC. So they have made this the story that it needs to become. And I think that's a very important point that's been missed. This Bauman guy is a DNC hitman, and he's the guy they've hired to represent the family. Well, I got to tell you, it kind of makes it fair game. We need to go after the truth. Sorry for the family's loss. But America needs to know what happened.
Do you think the DNC has threatened, bribed? How have they got... Let me put it this way. I put myself in the shoes of Seth Rich's parents. I would leave no stone unturned, no theory not considered in getting to the truth of what's happening. Why do you think they're pulling back from Hannity giving legitimate news exposure to the event?
That's a great question, and I've actually thought about that a lot. And, you know, they hired this private investigator who was a former D.C. detective. And when he came out with the news about the WikiLeaks connection, they attacked him. And they did it through Bauman, of course, the DNC guy. So I think they wanted the truth up to some point or some event. And so, of course, you and I are just speculating here. What caused them to turn on their private investigator when he found the truth and claim he had no right to talk and even talk about conspiracy theories? Why did they abruptly stop their pursuit for truth? That's a great question.
Well, when federal prosecutors looking into related subjects begin to get their heads bashed in, there's a lot more here than reasonable suspicion. This is a clear criminal conspiracy. And I thought, too, Anthony Weiner was going to turn state's evidence. I had this evidence, this information 3 weeks ago from three different sources, two I knew well. They said Weiner and Abedin were going to go state's evidence against Podesta. Podesta might roll over on Clinton. This was the order I was given, and I went with the story. Well, they were right. Uh-huh. Weiner got busted. He got a horrible plea deal because he wouldn't roll over. Yeah. Do you think he's going to survive in prison?
You know, normally I would. And by the way, you're the only one that pointed that out. He got 27 months, which is, on a first offense, is normally a probation time. And you're right. He did the time because he didn't want to be exposed to the Clinton death machine that's out there. So, you know, he might survive prison because he's playing ball with the Clintons. You know, he's doing the time, and he's not singing and his wife, I don't know, or about to be former wife, she's going to survive this or wind up doing. And I think she'll face a much more serious situation. You know, these emails that she passed to him contain classified information, and the nonsense is she claims that she gave it to her husband so he could print it out. I mean, it's so preposterous that it's impossible that reasonable people can accept this as an explanation. Of course, that was Comey's testimony. But she's going to be facing something even more serious, which is a felony on this classified material that she allowed to be leaked. And by the way, I've read the statute. Intent is irrelevant. If you do it, it doesn't matter whether you intended to or not. You still can be charged and found guilty of it. And Comey, when he said that Hillary didn't intend to leak this stuff, again, it was irrelevant. The statute says that intent is no explanation or excuse for this. So with Sessions as the DOJ going after Huma over this thing, which I believe is going to happen, I know you do as well, she's going to be facing a much more serious penalty. Therefore, she may turn on Hillary. That's a likely scenario, but it's not going to happen over minor charges. It's going to have to be major.
Yeah, this is why I still think Weiner is in trouble. He's showing I'm a good boy and I'm you know sucking up to the Clinton criminal machine, but at the end of the day, as other leaks appear in other locales, he's going to be compelled to testify. And he's going to be offered immunity, which means he can't take the fifth. And he's going to have to speak up and tell what he knows, and this is why I think the Clintons have to kill him.
Yeah.
That's why I think he's a dead man either way. Abedin's an interesting case, though, Gary. A lot of people may not be aware of this, but she has family members, male and female, connected to the Muslim Brotherhood in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I'm
and
aware of that.
And Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this really complicates the issue. What do you look at this unfold? Do you think Sessions is going to go after her singly? Or how do you see this playing out?
That's a good point. He may go after her singularly just because he needs her to turn state's evidence. But it's it's going to be over something bigger than, you know, it's probably going to be the emails of classified information that she knowingly has sent. But it's going to be about state's evidence, because she's not somebody they care about getting. It's going to be Hillary. And I think that's the big news, Dave. This thing is leading up to them going after Hillary and Obama. And they're going to have to. If for no other reason is the best defense is a strong offense. They're going to have to go after them to defend themselves from this death by a thousand cuts that keeps coming from this nonsense about Russian collusion. And Trump needs to take the offensive. He needs to go after these people and change the news cycle, change the narrative. And you know, this wag the dog where you drive the news cycle. There's only so many minutes of news in the course of the day. Well, the Democrats have been masters at dominating the news cycle, making Trump look bad over trivial nonsense while they provide cover for their serious issues. So Trump's going to play this game. He's going to spin it. And I think he was trying to get his people in place before he went on the offensive. And I'm hopeful that he is as smart as I think he is, not as he appears at the moment. I'm hopeful that he's going to turn this thing around and go after these criminals, and that he can survive this.
I'm kind of the mindset. Let me back up. He could have gone after Hillary on day one. Actually, day three. That would have been Monday following the inauguration. He could have gone after her. He had enough just based on FBI data. She's guilty of sin. Could have done 5 years for each count. Could have got Abedin as well and Wiener. And could have got them lock, stock, and barrel. But Gary, I started thinking about this, and I'm just going to think out loud here for you to comment. As corrupt as the lower federal courts are, and as much as they've ruled against legitimate authority of the president to handle and control immigration, I don't think he wanted to go to court on a singular issue that a federal judge could say, no, we can get around this, technicalities. I think he's going after deep state stuff. And by that, I'm talking about child sex trafficking on multiple planes, which brings in HSBC Bank, which brings in gun running and drug running to go with the child sex trafficking. And what I honestly think, he's trying to get them on so many different, from so many different angles and avenues, there's no escape. It's not one boa constrictor, it's several. That's, and I could be totally out to lunch on this, but if he was going to go after her for the emails, that should have already happened. So why is he waiting? That's my question to you.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, you know, first of all, I agree with everything you just said. The evidence right now is that he's going after the pedophilia. And you've done a great job, by the way, of waking the American people up, letting them know that those in power are just infested with acts of pedophilia. And you know, Bill Clinton has been to Jeffrey Epstein's rape island, whatever they call it, in the Lolita Express, multiple times. By the way, Chuck Schumer, I read recently, has been to Pedophile Island in the Bahamas, owned by Jeffrey Epstein. But the story there is that many of these people in power, and by the way, the Hastert was sued again today by a young rape victim from many, many years ago. I don't know if you saw that in the news today. So these people are just, you know, that's what they do. And I think they do it because they're wicked, and I think they do it because they're enticed into it so that it can be filmed and held over to them. It becomes a badge of membership for all of them to participate in pedophilia so that none of them can speak against the other person. And so I think Trump is all over that. He and Sessions are going after it. I think they've prosecuted 1,500 people so far, which is more.
No, Gary. That was in the first 28 days.
I don't know
the latest head count on who they've gone after, but Sessions nailed 1,500. And something I wrote about, I remember the mainstream media went after Trump with a vengeance for entertaining President Duterte from the Philippines. Shouldn't be meeting with him. He's a thug. He called Obama a son of a whore. The reason he called him that, because Obama was trying to travel to his country to tell him to stop executing drug dealers. And he basically told Obama where to go and what to do when he got there. And what did Duterte do when he left the meeting with Trump? He went promptly back to the Philippines and arrested 3,000 online child sex traffickers. And I can conclude nothing except for the fact that Trump gave him intelligence information necessary for him to do that.
Yeah. And you know what else he gave him? He gave him very quiet approval. And that's a great thing. Yeah, I was just at dinner. We were having a discussion about Duterte, and the lady across from me, her sister, is in the Philippines, a missionary, and she's in a community that's being threatened right now by ISIS. So we were just having this conversation, and she asked me, "Is Duterte gonna, is he the right guy to have there?" And I said, "Yes, because he's going to put the Filipino people first. And he's got the courage to do whatever is necessary to go against ISIS and not just fight them, but to destroy them." And that, of course, is what we have in Trump. And that's what we have in Putin, by the way. So we've got some leaders rising up now that are going to use their brain and their good judgment to do the things that to protect their own people, the American people, the Filipinos, the Russians. And that kind of leadership has been absent because of the globalism in the deep state. You know, that brings up another topic, Dave, I wanted to talk to you about. The deep state. You know, you and I and your listeners understand what that really means. And it means that there has been a group of people who have pursued power and wealth and doing it on a global scale. But the definition of deep state has been modified in the last, probably 60 days. And I hadn't discussed this with you, and I haven't heard anybody really talk about it. But if you look at the Trump administration, or even Fox News or Lou Dobbs, when they talk about deep state, they're now talking about those embedded Obamites that are still in these different departments that are still working there, who are sabotaging Trump's efforts and this sort of thing. This is an interesting thing because they've actually co-opted the term deep state and made it look like it's simply the embedded former people that are in those positions that you can't fire. And yet, that's not the definition of deep state. Deep state are those elite that have pursued power and wealth over a long period of time. Have you noticed that definition of deep state being formed in the last 6 or so weeks and agree that it may be deceptive?
It is. They're trying to control the narrative by slowly changing the connotation of the term. That's how I see it. The deep state is simple. It's people who are dedicated to the New World Order. They're satanic to their core. Their satanic activities bind them together. They're all criminal. They use bribery, subterfuge, murder to control many elected officials. And they survive from one administration to another, so they're largely not touchable. The proof we see of them are the minions they leave behind in the State Department, the FBI, like Comey, Hillary Clinton, and so forth. Those are their minions. And the deep state is omnipresent. It's stage four cancer for our country. I mean, we really have our hands full. And I said this to Joe in the last hour, and Joe Hagman was on. And I get your reaction to this, Gary. I see two Americas. I see the corrupted elected America that's influenced like a hidden planet we call the deep state. And then there's the deep state that will someday do away with elected government, the Constitution, seize our arms, practice depopulation, use FEMA camps. And I think this is what the deep state is moving towards, is coming out of the closet and emerging as the leadership force in this country. I don't know how you see it, but this is what keeps me up at night.
I agree with you totally. You use the term controlling the narrative, and I think this is important. If they can co-opt the term deep state, much like they co-opted the term conspiracy theorist, you know, years ago. And they can get that term accepted in the mainstream, in the common vernacular, that deep state is not the elite and the pursuit for power at all costs, as you've just discussed. But they can define deep state as simply those operatives that have stayed behind as a result of these administrations. And there seems to be a real effort to do that. And I don't know whether Trump and his people are doing it deliberately to make the term deep state acceptable, and then to modify the term once, you know, people stop yelling conspiracy theorists when they hear that. So it may be a good thing that we can openly talk about deep state, which, by the way, is on Fox News all day long now, and you never heard it 6 months ago. So the term has become popular. Unfortunately, the definition of the term has been co-opted, but maybe it's a process to wake people up. We can talk about deep state now, and then we can define it later. And anyway, I think that's a very important point right now that nobody seems to be talking about.
Well, I think it's critically important. Also, I mentioned to Joe that when the federal prosecutor murder story broke, they really worked hard to control the narrative. I went to Google early this morning. It was about 4:30 a.m. Pacific time. And I made a list of all the news outlets that Google listed in order on page one. And it started with the Post, Washington Post, the New York Times, ABC News, and so forth. Everyone on page one was mainstream media outlet. And they all used a descriptor possibility as a suicide for a man who had his head bashed in. And you didn't see alternative media until the middle of page two. And to me, this was Google's attempt to control the narrative on this, too. And that told me, hey, I'm really onto something. You know, usually when you see a news story, Gary, you know this, you'll see mainstream, you'll see alternative, and they're kind of mixed in. But here, there was a real attempt to obfuscate any other interpretation but the formal message.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're seeing it all the time now. Again, it's becoming so common that it's amazing we even have to talk about it. Google, Facebook have created algorithms become automated filtering systems impact. It's just crazy around it. It's amazing. I'm just the world has changed so much in 6 months I don't want to say I'm overwhelmed, but you and I have been motivated to get the truth out. I talked to Steve Quell today, and we're all just sitting around thinking, you know, it's becoming so easy to explain things that you almost feel a little guilty for it.
It is amazing. Now I know where Steve got the fact you were appearing on the show, because he put that up there as his number one story. And Steve, if you're listening at all, thank you very much for doing that. But yeah, he gave us a free promo there for that, and now I know where he got it from. But let me kind of change directions for a second, and just a small digression. I loved your movie, and I wrote a promo piece for it. I also wrote the critical analysis of it, or one of the several critical analyses. And your movie, Amerigeddon, how much of that, now we're a year past this, how much of it do you see these scenarios possibly playing out today?
You know, it's interesting how the North Korean threat has been elevated almost from day one when Trump was inaugurated. And of course, to catch people up, they haven't seen the movie. I wrote the script and started and produced a movie that would really warn people the risk Americans have from an EMP event, an electromagnetic pulse. And that's simply a nuclear device you detonate over our country at a certain altitude and create gamma rays that destroy electronics. Those electronics include the power grid, of course, the internet, water systems, banking. And there were two congressional studies that determined that 90% of Americans would die within 12 months because of the, you know, we're so dependent upon technology today. So North Korea has two satellites today that pass over our country. And we don't know, but it's a strong possibility that one of them has a nuclear device. And if Kim Jong-un were to detonate that nuclear device as it goes over our country, it would cause the worst catastrophe in the modern era. And so there's two important points here. Trump is talking about the threat of missiles and conventional nuclear attacks, like from a submarine and these sorts of things. But very likely, if they're motivated to attack us, it's going to be from detonating a device on a satellite, which it's much simpler. It's indefensible unless we shoot the doggone thing down, which is what he needs to do. And so, anyway, a movie depicted that happening, of course, and the deaths of the American people and the survivors and so forth. And so here Trump came out of the gate escalating the Kim Jong-un North Korean threat to the United States. But absent the most likely scenario, the scenario of an EMP, and that's important because the – you know, I don't think there's any money for the deep state, the military-industrial complex, to defend the country from a satellite. But there's plenty of money creating missile defense systems and sending ships to North Korea. So we're spending all this time and effort with a threat that's real, but the element of it that's not likely to happen. Because that's a military-industrial complex opportunity to profit from, while we ignore the one that's most likely to happen, and my movie depicted that. So it's kind of neat to have been able to tell a story that it just becomes more timely than ever. And by the way, over a million people watched that movie, partly thanks to your efforts, Dave, which I want to thank you for. But hopefully we've motivated a million people to start doing some kind of preparation because our country is not doing the things necessary. And by the way, Texas is the only state in the country that is hardening its grid in response to this threat. And I'm friends with the governor, talked to him a couple times last week, and he understands that Texas can harden its grid and become a place where major corporations will choose to relocate because we're protecting their infrastructure in the event that an EMP happens.
You know what's interesting is my congressman here, Congressman Trent Franks, who I don't agree with a lot on, but 8-9 years ago he came to my church and spoke to a packed house about how he was being ignored by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and other federal agencies under Obama's control, where he wanted the grid hardened. And he said it only would cost $2 billion, the cost of one B-1 bomber. And he was relentless in that pursuit, and all of a sudden someone talked to him, and he stopped talking. There have been a few that have been out there, and I'll give you one other situation here that I really find interesting. The remake of the movie Red Dawn. It was originally supposed to be the Chinese attacking, and the federal government under Obama had a fit, and the producers of that show changed it from the Chinese to the North Koreans. Talk about predictive programming and coinciding with what you're saying. And let me make one more observation about your movie. You had the subject of UN peacekeepers, you know, coming in to basically take over the United States. It was the end of all American sovereignty. Well, there's a situation in California right now involving the Oroville Dam, and my good friend Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio is about ready to come out with more damning stuff, no pun intended, on how this dam's going to go. 2.5 million people at risk. All kinds of stuff is going to happen negatively. It's going to devastate the economy of the country. 25% of retail comes out of California. There's going to be some famine, some spot famine situations because of this, and I'm not going to get into the detail, but here's the bottom line. California has already entered into an agreement with the UN to cover them should there be a natural disaster. So there you go. Armageddon rears its head in California politics and Governor Jerry Brown.
Yeah.
I want to give you credit for that because you are ahead of the curve on this.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I see if I had some foresight at all, it's because of people like you and Steve Quell and Doug Hagman. I mean, you guys do this every day and fearlessly, relentlessly, and thank goodness, because there's not many of you. You know, I'm friends with Alex Jones, and man, has he been pummeled financially in every which way. So you guys are, I mean, you're standing in the gap. And as Christians, that's the role that the people like you are playing, standing in the gap. So I've just been blessed to, you know, to be informed and awake. You know, on the UN thing, there was another interesting thing that happened after I had already written the script. I think it just as I was beginning to film it, Obama sent Kerry to sign a UN treaty, signing off that the UN was to come in to the U.S. in a time of crisis to maintain order. And of course, the Congress Senate didn't approve this treaty, but Kerry signed it nonetheless. So there's a standing treaty, even though it's not been approved, that the UN can come in if we end up with some kind of disorder. And so they've been lining up all of their dominoes for this thing. And you know, if you have a new listener tonight who's wondering, how the fuck is this be going on when it's never in the news? Now, they've got to understand that 95% of the mainstream media is owned by six corporations, and those corporations are all controlled by a small number of people. They sit on each other's boards. You know, the money for pharmaceuticals, the money for you name it, gives people influence to dictate the narrative. And of course, the CIA, as you mentioned, had given the Washington Post $600 million. The media's propaganda. They not only don't report what we really need to know, but they slant it or they replace it with something else. We're in a country that we've lost our watchdog, and it's been replaced with a lapdog. We have a lapdog media. So if you've got a new listener, welcome to the daylight. This is the only hope they've got of getting the truth and being informed. Of course, the big thing is most people don't want to be informed. It's too uncomfortable. And of course, you're an expert on that.
Well, a lot of them don't, but more and more do. And, you know, we play a numbers game. You know, the Nazi propaganda machine was correct. If you tell a big enough lie long enough, the people will come to believe it. Well, the inverse is true, too. If you tell the truth often enough, the people will come to understand it. And I think that with the relentless message coming from the independent media, I think that more and more people are being won over. Donald Trump did more than anybody else could have done to awaken most of America. Some have chosen to go back to sleep. But there's a lot of people out there that now understand what's going on. And I have to tell you, with my own family members, Gary, I have seen, because of the Trump campaign and because of their exposure to me, and they thought I was an absolute raving lunatic nut, now they're beginning to see why I take the positions I take. So I've seen progress within my own family. So I'm hopeful. I just don't know if we have the time. And let me get into the time issue. On one hand, we're racing towards impeachment with trumped-up charges. On the other hand, I think Sessions and Trump are going after the deep state on multiple fronts, and child sex trafficking is a lever that's going to open up multiple criminal activities. And I just wonder who's going to get to the bank first. That's what scares me.
Yeah. I believe that Trump is going to win. I believe he's going to finally position himself and the right people to go to battle against the enemies of this country. And, you know, you and I both agree that Trump is at least a reprieve from the globalist. But I think they have overplayed their hand so badly. They've made so many horrendous mistakes. You know, even an asleep American, when they see the evidence that, that there's pedophilia in the highest places, that's disgusting enough to wake up anybody, and I think a call to action. And so I think Trump is positioning himself to win this battle, and he's a strategist. He's had to get the right people in there, and of course they fought every inch of the way. And you know, on this impeachment, the impeachment thing, of course, is nonsense. There's no collusion with the Russians, and everybody's, you know, even a bunch of the Democrats have admitted it. You know, Comey has said it publicly. Pelosi said it. There are a bunch of these people. They're not, you know, there's not enough there to hang their hat on to claim that that he's committed some sort of a treasonous act. Even the other day, when he talked with the Russian ambassador, and you know, the president of the country, singularity has the power to declassify anything. So it's impossible for him to release classified information by having a discussion with somebody. He's the person who has absolute authority over it. And so when he's sitting there talking to the ambassador of Russia, and he's, you know, trying to work the art of the deal, and he wants to open up about something, that's his business. Firing Comey. You know, he didn't have to have a reason to fire Comey. You know, and the investigation, if there was one, that he was colluding with the Russians, you know, investigations continue. So I don't think they've got anything close to what they're going to need to impeach him. And I think he's got a world of resources, and I think he's smart enough to exercise those, you know, those powers to bring down the globalists in this country. And you know, we as Americans, we don't deserve a reprieve. Our nation's fallen a long, long way, but God just might be merciful enough to let us continue to be some sort of beacon. You know, we still send out Christian missionaries all over this world. So let's hope that God has mercy on us.
I agree. Well, I understand when I ask this next question, you're limited in what you can say. But tell us what you can about where the ambassadorship to Haiti now stands.
Well, I'm in the running for it, partly because no one else is crazy enough to want it. it's a rough neighborhood. You don't go there to enjoy the social life. So I've got a good shot at it, and some, you know, my chief advocate is Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, and he's really worked at it, and so he's asked personally the head of the State Department, my memory went blank all of a sudden, the Secretary of State, and he the other day sent a personal note from the State Department to the White House requesting it. So I'm in a really good position to get it. And you know, a lot of your listeners know my wife and I go to Haiti frequently. We were there for 6 weeks after the hurricane. We brought three aircraft. We were the only air evac of two major cities. We saved dozens of lives. Took food, medical people all across the, you know, the peninsula down there to places you couldn't get to without a cargo aircraft. And so we've been working there since the earthquake, which now is 7 years, I think, 2010. And so we have the humanitarian background. I'm a CEO of a major corporation, and so I've got that background. And I have an allegiance to America, one that is committed to integrity and honesty in the way we deal with other countries, particularly countries that have been so abused as Haiti has. So if Trump wants somebody to go there with honor and dignity, represent this country and help us to help them, I'm the guy. If Obama would have never sent me because I'm not corrupt, and I would not have abused those people, which is what happened. By the way, the ambassador to Haiti was fired a few weeks ago, and he was not a political appointee. He was a State Department employee. And so when he was fired, it kind of opened up the opportunity for this thing to happen a little faster. And another thing I want to say is Trump has had such a difficult time getting his cabinet picked, you know, that the 152 ambassadors that he's got to put in position. So, you know, unfortunately, is on a back burner.
That's what I was asking. And, you know, and I want to give you credit where credit's due, and I know you don't want this kind of credit, but the people need to hear what you did. The last count that I had, and I know I'm outdated, excuse me, was that you spent well over $20 million of your own money to save these people from Haiti.
That's probably ambitious.
Am I close?
You're high. Yeah. Okay. Over 10 years is probably half that.
Okay. Well, regardless, you put your money where your mouth is to help your fellow human being. And this is in contrast to the Clinton Foundation that stole $2 billion of Haitian relief money.
Yep.
And not to mention they were running child sex trafficking rings out of Haiti. I mean, I've come across all of it. I haven't done a story on that because I simply haven't had the time. But they did that out of Haiti, and it's something I came across in my research. I'm sure you're aware of it, too.
I am, and it's one of the key reasons I want to go there. That is an intolerable violation of humanity. I want to do something about it.
Maybe the Haitian government, when you go there and cooperate with them, will actually bring charges against the Clintons.
Yeah, you know, who knows? I'm going to go there with a mission. And by the way, you know, in the franchise business, my wife and I founded the 10th largest franchise company in the world. We have an expertise of
Gary, I'm sorry, my friend.
Time to go.
We're out of time, and I wanted to hear this. We're
going to
have you back sooner. We're
going to
have you back sooner rather than later, but this was powerful stuff, and I know that my listening audience is rooting for you. We need people like you in American government that will actually set a good moral Christian tone, so we certainly hope that we can soon call you Ambassador Gary Haven. And we hope that when you're the ambassador, I can still get you to come back on the show.
Oh, you bet. You got it, Dave.
Okay.
I'm going to send you that text, I promise, and keep up the good work. God bless.
Okay, thanks, my friend. Gary Haven, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be back in hour number three with our friends Bob Kudla and Ronnie McMullen. Stay tuned. It's going to get even more interesting. It just gets better and better as we go through the night. Thanks to Gary and thanks to Joe.